FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's July 25th, 2017. We're in Vancouver, but we're still taking care of business, which means we had to get John Rubino on this week to get the latest take on the monetary madness that is sweeping the globe. John, hey, good morning.
Morning, Kerry. Hey, I'm envious. Enjoy the sushi up there.
Yeah, I fully intend to do it. And, you know, there's a lot of good food in Vancouver. If you haven't been here, you're listening, I highly recommend it. I love the place. I mean, it's the kind of place where, especially being in Florida, John, this time of year, where it's 90 degrees and 95% humidity, here it's 72 degrees. It's lovely. I took a trip out to Victoria, to Vancouver Island, and God, it was so much fun. I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah, that is a great place. You know, if I was forced to move from where I live now, Vancouver would be my first choice of where else to go.
Okay. Well, rightfully so. I mean, the taxes are insane. You know, they do have like some of the worst taxes on the planet, but all the other things that this place has really makes up for it. Almost. So if you can be a citizen of the world and you just come and hang out here, that would be a good thing, you know?
Maybe just visiting is good enough, which I plan to do soon, hopefully.
Yeah, well, all the great conferences that we go to all take place in Vancouver for good reason, right? I mean, it's really a question of where the, you know, where the companies are, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and with conferences, too, I think a lot of it is less the conference itself than where it is.
Yeah.
And so you think, oh, I'm going to Vegas this weekend, you know, and the conference is the excuse to do that. Or same thing with Vancouver. You know, it's a place you want to visit. And then a conference is an excuse to go there. And the conference organizers know that. So they put their conferences in great cities most of the time.
That they do. So.
Anyhow. Monetary madness is definitely the order of the day out there. The Fed speaks this week. So on schedule, U.S. markets are rocking. You know, the stock market is way up and bond yields are up, which means that people are worried about inflation and higher interest rates. But we probably won't hear much from the Fed this week. They'll probably say something that is kind of innocuous, maybe a little on the dovish side, but nothing really groundbreaking, because the Fed has already tightened a bit in the past year. They've raised the Fed funds rate by 100 basis points and have decreased the size of their balance sheet, which is to say they pulled a little bit of money out of the system in the past year. And it's not clear that they're going to want to do a lot more in the short run. And it's also not clear that this makes any difference, because the crucial thing to understand about the world of money is that money is fungible. You know, if China creates some new yuan, that currency finds its way into the global financial system. Same thing with euros or Japanese yen. You know, whoever creates it and tosses it out into the world is really throwing it into this big global financial system that just moves the money around regardless of its source. And the other central banks of the world are incredibly easy right now and getting easier. For instance, look at a chart of China's total credit creation. In other words, how many loans are being taken out in China at every level of society? And you get a number that's about $3 trillion a year. That's a huge amount of new credit being created. And Europe, the European Central Bank, is aggressively easy right now. And Mario Draghi, the chairman of the ECB, came out recently and said that now's not the time to tighten. And the ECB was watching the markets closely. And if there's any sign of any kind of a disruption, they were going to jump in with even bigger asset purchases. In other words, even greater money creation going forward. And so the markets know that no matter what happens, new money is going to flow into the assets that traders are buying, and so they're not worried, you know. So European stocks and bonds are holding up really well. Italy can borrow at about 2% a year, and Greece just issued bonds for the first time in a lot of years. In other words, somebody lent money to Greece. That's how a bond issue works.
Right mind.
Which is basically
that.
People lending money to
who
the issuer.
Who would do that? Who would lend money to Greece?
Who would lend money to Greece?
I mean, that's a question.
Well, you know, when you lend money to Greece in today's Eurozone, you're actually lending money to Germany.
Yeah.
Because the European Central Bank stands ready to backstop all the bonds of the Eurozone members, which is to say that Germany is backing those bonds. You know, Germany is basically right. The source of financial strength in the European Union and the Eurozone. So when you buy an Italian bond, in your own mind, if you're a bond trader, you're buying a German bond because you know Germany is backing it up. And that's how Italy can borrow money. And it's the same way that Greece can borrow money. They don't really borrow it themselves. It's like having a cosigner. You know, if your kid goes out to buy a car, nobody's going to lend them money to buy a car. But if you cosign, anybody will let them have a $30,000 or $40,000 car. That's the way the European bond market works now. Germany is backstocking. Right. Backstopping everybody.
Yeah.
And then there's Japan, mm-hmm. which is the probably the easiest money system in the world right now. They just had a couple of central bank governors who were seen as skeptics of the current incredibly easy Bank of Japan policy leave. And they were replaced by people who are dovish, who are in favor of easy money as far as the eye can see, and of achieving a 2% inflation target by any means. That's the quote from the guy, by any yes. means.
Whatever it
so
takes.
So the whole world.
Whatever it takes, right, John?
Yeah, whatever it takes is the law of the land pretty much everywhere except in the U.S. And it really still is here, too. I mean, if the U.S. stock market had a 5% hiccup, the Fed would reverse course in a heartbeat. They would start pouring money into the system because with good reason, they're terrified of a bear market in any kind of major asset class because the system is so overleveraged and so fragile that we can't handle something like that. You know, if U.S. stocks dropped by 20%, which is a normal end of cycle bear market, you would see the wealth effect kick into reverse so dramatically. You know, the system might actually collapse from a 2% or 20% drop in stock prices. So the government via the central bank can't let that happen. But of course, what they have to do to keep it from happening is to create a torrent of new money and pump it into the system. And that basically swaps a credit crisis for a currency crisis at some point in the future. In other words, we're creating so much new currency, at some point people are going to lose faith in it, not want to own it, and then the value of the currency collapses, and then monetary policy doesn't work anymore, and then it's game over. And so we're headed for that. We don't know when it's going to happen, but it is clearly coming based on the policies of today's central banks.
Hey. And there's something else going on. Like, it's one thing when you have financial disruptions, but here's a potential black swan, John. There was evidently an auto cartel in Germany. All of the main automobile producers were involved in it. Daimler, Audi, Porsche, BMW. And that the purpose of this cartel was to fix the tests of the diesel emissions tests, which they got caught, VW got caught in the U.S., but evidently they were all doing it, which is what I said from the beginning, because automakers are their own best customers for all of their products, all their parts. They ship parts back and forth all the time. I said they all had to be involved in it when I heard that Volkswagen got caught. And the scandal just broke. That's Germany's biggest industry. We've already got car sales taking a hit. And now they're all going to get painted black, you know, besmirched with the same brush. Potentially a big deal, John. You know, will it turn into the black swan that crushes Germany's economy? I don't know the answer to it. But I'll tell you this, it's not a good thing to have come out when car sales are on the decline.
Yeah, well, you know, in a rational world where there was actual justice and people got what they deserved, you would see the CEOs and lots of executive vice presidents and chief engineers, et cetera, of these big companies doing a perp walk, you know, being taken away in handcuffs and thrown into prison for fraud, because that's what this is. It's fraud. That's not how it works with big companies.
No.
Because people are terrified. Governments are terrified of, as you said, any kind of disruption to the financial markets. So they let these guys skate with fines. You know, they'll fine the companies a few billion dollars, which is a a tiny fraction of the sales that they made from these fraudulent tests that they ran, and everybody else will go scot-free. And that's, see, in the short run, it works, but in the long run, it diminishes people's trust in the system.
Exactly.
And when that trust reaches a certain tipping point, it evaporates. You know, it goes down a little bit, and then it falls off the table. And, you know, we're really headed for that point with big banks in the U.S. committing all the crimes that they've committed, and then no bankers even being mentioned in the press, and certainly none going to jail. Mm-hmm. And if it's the same thing with the auto industry, that's one more chip taken out of the edifice of trust that the average person feels towards the big systems that they used to think were taking care of them. So it's coming, because everybody's untrustworthy and governments are going to incredible lengths to avoid any kind of a hiccup in the markets. And to do that, they're having to break ethical rules, if not flat out legal and constitutional rules, which eventually will come back to bite them.
Yeah, these guys are obviously going to be too big to jail. They'll just fine them like $100 billion like they were a tobacco company, and they'll go on. But, you know, they are brands, first and foremost. Volkswagen seems to have recovered, although they had to pay out tens of billions of dollars. They're still paying it out. The whole industry itself getting a black eye really could psychologically be a turning point, John. Really could. They were doing this since the 90s.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing about these fines is that they're the cost of doing business, which means they're tax deductible.
Yeah. Well, so, it's only,
you know, when you see a $10 billion number, it's really $6 billion because it's pre-tax money they've got to pay out. And then in various other ways, it's diminished so that, you know, at some point, it's not really that big a deal to these guys. It's much less than they earn from running scams. So the message is run your scams. Yeah. And of course, at some point, you'll have to pay a little protection money, but it'll be much less than you'll make if you effectively defraud people, you know. And eventually that will definitely come back to bite us one way or another. It's not clear that, because the big systems are ready to blow up, it's not clear that a lot of this stuff will actually end up being the cause of anything, because so many other things are already out there that could cause a giant financial crisis. So it's, I don't know.
It could be the straw, John, that breaks the camel's back. The system is so fragile in so many ways. I mean, look, every car maker in the world, how did they feed this buying frenzy since 2009, since the crash? All through their captive finance agencies, leasing financial companies, financing purchase of leases, of new cars, of auto loans, cut rate financing. That's how they did it. So they have a real major impact indirectly on the financial system. And look, it's just another mark, another black mark, another potential reason for the system to implode at some point. And is it going to speed it up, or is it so minor in the scope of things it's not going to matter? You know, there's a lot of people around the globe that really, really despise big business. And a lot of their concerns, a lot of your concerns, a lot of your anger at big business, at these big corporations, is justified. And look, I don't know if the fact that it put out 30 parts per million worth of fumes or smut, or it put out, you know, they said it was going to do 10. I don't know what the scheme of things, whether it matters. The fact is, they've been doing this thing for over 20 years, and they just got caught. And you know what? At some point, John, government might have to actually make a stand and send people to jail to save their own skins, right?
You know, it's interesting that nobody's made that a political platform yet. I would think it would be really popular. If you ran on a platform of, all right, I'm going to put 1,000 bankers and auto company and tobacco company and oil company executives in jail.
Yeah.
Within my first 4 years in office, that's a promise. And I would think you'd get a guaranteed 30% of the population voting for you just on that platform, you know, and you'd have to fill in some other blanks to reassure another 20% of people. But you would be right there. You'd be in the running with just that. And nobody's done it yet.
Well, you know, they've got a lot of room in Rikers, and they've, you know, they can get rid of the purse snatchers and put in the money changers, right? Put the bankers there.
Ooh, and, you know, Kerry, that might be the other part of the platform. You legalize marijuana, you release all the nonviolent drug offenders, and you fill their beds with bankers and auto company executives.
Well, you know, it's going to come down to that.
I would vote for that guy no matter what else they stood for.
It's going to come down to that at some point. Either a political opportunist, or they're just going to get to the point where they say, all right, somebody's got to be accountable for something in this world, or we're just going to go down the collective sewer. And we're just going to have chaos, because if there's two sets of rules, eventually the people who have to follow the crappy rules, you and I, are going to get fed up with it and just stop following the rules, period. I think we're heading towards that. As much as the Antifa and all that other stuff might be Soros inspired, the kernel of the unrest, the social unrest, was planted, seed of it, many, many years ago, and it's bearing fruit now. So these guys are just helping it along. If the economy was great, your kids were getting jobs out of college, none of this would have any effect whatsoever. It's all the bad things that are happening to the economy and to the world now that have made this possible, John.
Yeah. Well, usually the reckoning from periods of excess comes after the crash that is brought on by the period of excess. You know, we got Glass-Steagall during the Great Depression after the stock market collapsed and all the crimes that were being committed by the stock manipulators, et cetera, were exposed. While the bubble is inflating, relatively few people want to rock the boat because they're enjoying the fruits of the bubble. Now, as you said, those fruits are going to a narrower and narrower part of the population. So we're reaching a tipping point where enough people are willing to vote for candidates who promise to fix the excesses. Problem is, we don't really have any candidates who are actual reform candidates right now. we haven't gotten someone
why
who...
Why would we have one of those? You know, who needs them? But we're going to get them. More than we ever wanted, more than we ever thought possible. You know, we're going to get those, we're going to get those candidates. And
after the system blows up, though, probably. That's when it's going to come.
Trump is, in a way, the embodiment of that, you know, sick of the swamp, drain the swamp, all that stuff, right? I mean,
He said those words when he ran. But then he hired basically half of Goldman Sachs to run the government. So, you know, he didn't actually live up to the reformer image, or he hasn't yet. And Bernie Sanders wouldn't have either, probably, because he's just a basic socialist, which is not reform.
They're under investigation by the feds for loan fraud now. I mean, come on. Bernie is just a fraud. You know, he's just a total freaking fake, and good riddance to him. Let him make an ignominious departure from the world political scene. I personally think it's probably Hillary Clinton's people who are behind it rather than Trump, because they probably blame him as well for her defeat. You know, if only Bernie didn't run, we wouldn't have alienated all those snowflakes, all those social justice warriors, and I'd be president now. Yeah, right. Yeah, I believe that. But yeah, so the day of reckoning will come, and then there's a lot of people that are going to go to jail or be hung by their thumbs, right?
Eventually. The problem is that a lot of the guys who are committing the crimes now are in their 50s, 60s, and sometimes 70s, which means that they're not going to spend very much of their life in jail, if they spend any, because they're so old. You know, they basically have lived their lives and benefited from their crimes. Yeah. So, you know, if they're discredited at the age of 78 and spend a couple of years in club fed and and, you know, then die of something. That doesn't seem like justice to me. You know, they need to spend longer in prison and their families need to be bankrupted. But that's probably not what we'll see.
Listen to you. Yeah. Well, accountability is a very important part of maintaining social order, of keeping society running. You know, it's really important. Can't emphasize it enough. And when accountability breaks down, social order breaks down. I guess that's what I was really trying to say.
You know, and Carrie, capitalism runs on the perception of honesty. Mm-hmm. And if you can't trust the guys managing the money and running the big companies, then the system completely breaks down. The wealth creation process that capitalism is capable of doesn't work. And so you get a system which is, you know, it just fails to create enough new wealth to keep people in the game. And you don't get any upward mobility and everybody's disaffected. And then political chaos breeds financial chaos. And that's really where we are now.
Yeah.
So we're heading into a death spiral that has as its source a lack of trust in the big systems and in the people who are running the big systems. So unless we fix that, well, actually, there is no fix for this. You know, we're headed off the cliff regardless, just because the numbers are so big. We owe so much money. But back in, say, the 1990s, when we had a chance to fix this, that's how we would have had to fix it. You know, is right. Make sure that everything is transparent and you can trust the people who have been chosen and who have risen to the high levels of these big systems. You know, mm-hmm. can trust the bankers and trust the corporate CEOs. Yeah. And it didn't work. We can't. So now the system is going to break down.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm kind of inclined to agree with you there. I think we had our chance. You know, during the SNL crisis, hundreds of people went to jail, rightly or wrongly. They went to jail, you know, and
that's the correct response to a period of, you know, financial crimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, look, I was having this discussion with about OJ, because I think OJ is so instructive on the purposes of punishment. All right. Like sending OJ to jail for whatever he did there in Nevada, armed theft, kidnapping, whatever. We won't get into the whole murder thing, but the whole point is that, you know, our penal system is supposed to be a deterrent. Both in terms of if you've been punished by it before, you don't want to go back again, and for other people who might be considering breaking the law, right? It's a deterrent. And that's a major, major aspect of it. And when nobody gets called to account, then it loses that aspect of it, which is very, very important. It's not just to exact retribution by society for a wrongdoer and things of that nature, and feed the prison industrial complex as well. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
That's an important aspect of it in this corrupt day and age. But seriously, it's supposed to be a deterrent, and that's what's totally lacking from the system now. All deterrence is just a chimera, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, capitalism, well, life in general runs on object lessons. You know, somebody has to screw up to define the limits of behavior in whatever aspect of life you're talking about. And then you see what does work and what doesn't work, and what you can do and what you can't do. So hundreds of people learn from one catastrophe, one person's misfortune.
Right.
And in capitalism in particular, you need failure. You know, you need big companies to go bankrupt really spectacularly. You need just absolute corporate collapse every once in a while so that people know what they can and can't do. And what we've done in today's world is we've told the big companies, don't worry, we won't let you fail. If you're a bank, you know, run a prop trading desk that takes insane chances with taxpayer money, and you keep the profits, and we will protect you if there's any kind of a failure. And they learned that lesson, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. Well, it's been said that capitalism without bankruptcy is like religion without sin.
Exactly. You've got to, you have to have a downside.
Yes.
To moderate the excitement of the upside. Otherwise, you just go crazy.
Yeah. Huh. Well, hey, we just got this note that the Senate has voted on a motion to proceed, beginning debate on the healthcare legislation. So unlike
there's healthcare legislation.
Well, they're willing to debate it. And so only Murkowski and Collins voted against proceeding to debate. You know, it's just to put it on the floor. So I guess, what's his name? Pence, our erstwhile vice president, and the rate things are going, might one day be our president, had to break the tie. So he got it through. This is the first step because, look, they could put whatever they want in the bill and pass it in the Senate. Okay. They could give candy to everybody on the Senate floor for 365 days a year, free candy. And then the real bill here is going to take place in the reconciliation hearing between the Senate and the House. That's where LBJ learned how to craft legislation, because he would basically be the committee person responsible for the final bill. And then that bill gets voted on the House and the Senate. And God help any of those senators, those Republicans who vote against the final product. They're just going to be in a world of pain. They're going to be finished. So this was a big move. But anyway, wasn't why we were talking. So check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Email us at kl@carrielutz.com. Twitter feeds at Carrie Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we will pick up where we left off next Monday when I'm back from this much needed vacation. And then I get to start the whole moving process. Talk to you then.
Okay, Gary, see ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.